Discussions related to climate change typically focus on science and data, how temperatures have risen or greenhouse gas emissions or melting ice caps. And stories have been written that fit comfortably in that genre, whether they're dystopian or slightly more uplifting. A pair of academics at the University of California, Irvine, have decided to merge the science and humanities disciplines in an effort to specifically raise awareness of and fight climate change. They're Stephen Allison, professor of ecology, and Tyrus Miller, dean of the School of Humanities, and they're with me to discuss their efforts. Tyrus, to you first, how much of this comes down to making the science more accessible via storytelling?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one dimension, and we definitely embrace that as part of what the humanities can help to bring to these questions. But we also have research interest in, for instance, the history of the way in which earlier societies have adapted to various kinds of climate and extreme weather events, the way that philosophers across the world and literary people across the world have related to landscape and to beauty and their environments. And we think that these are elements of a genuine knowledge, just not simply the better communication of the knowledge that comes from the sciences and engineering.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize that the humanist scholars, the historians, the cultural scholars, literary scholars have a lot to contribute to actually solving the problem of climate change because they have this perspective of previous societies that address similar problems and because they have a cultural awareness and research and scholarship about the factors that are driving culture today and how that culture relates to the climate. So for example, one of the most interesting components, I think, of research that we described in our piece was this idea of petro-utopia, which was presented by a literary scholar named Stephanie Lemenager. And she outlined this ideal of the 1920s and 30s in Southern California as being this petroleum-based utopia, where the idea of utopia was kind of a sarcastic commentary because the petroleum and the images surrounding it were really driving a lot of the development of land, suburbia, a lot of the imagery in television and media. And that was basically what started it all in the culture of Southern California. And it's a culture that lives on today in kind of our sprawl and our freeways and our lifestyles. And so it's important to recognize that, you know, our fossil fuel emissions today in Southern California can be traced back to this cultural origin back in the 1920s and 30s.
To what extent does it come down to that charts and graphs and data and facts it simply hasn't been enough? Is that simplifying it too much?
No, I think it's an issue of charts and graphs and data being necessary to solve the problem, but not sufficient on their own. And I think that scientists have a lot to do in looking inward, looking at our own scientific culture, and asking how can we involve these other disciplines who have a different way of thinking and who might have different ways of relating to the human cultures that are going to have to solve this problem, the generations that are coming up to solve it, the indigenous populations that are around the world. In fact, there was just a new report full of facts that came out from the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is a UN-based organization of many of the world's best scientists. And you probably saw in the news last week, they had a new report that came out on the relationship between land and climate change, so land across the whole planet. And this report is very comprehensive. There are probably hundreds of facts in there and dozens of different ideas for how humanity can start to address the problem of climate change and how it's affecting our food resources and our water resources and threatening our society. But I think what the science can't do is really decide what we're going to do. And we need to involve the humanities and other fields.
And I'll also add that the humanities deal with, you know, some level of factual data, particularly in history. But we also deal with data that comes from the human imagination and human meaning making. And that can be fictions, it can be stories, it can be products of art. Climate is something that's very difficult to really intuitively understand. It's much more complex than our immediate experience of the weather. But stories and even, you know, kind of wild speculative stories like science fiction stories help to provide a kind of intuitive frame for understanding what these very complex, large-scale future developments in the climate might be.
Tyrus, let me ask you, when it comes to literature or film or whatnot, there does seem to be an emphasis to some extent, maybe these are the ones that really grab people, of a dystopian kind of model. Is that because perhaps that scares people into paying attention, or it's in some ways it's just a more interesting way of telling the story to get the facts out, the facts as they are in some ways made into fiction?
There's definitely a spectacular element to dystopian fiction that, of course, we're all moved by whether it moves us to fear or, you know, we enjoy that kind of intensity of dystopian fiction. You know, one part of you could say, well, maybe that's just actually being realistic about the problem, but I hope not. But I do think it's something that does allow us to, let's say, take a set of developments to a logical conclusion that we want to end before we get to that kind of conclusion. But I think in some ways, the dystopian fiction is really drawing radical conclusions from conditions now and giving us a warning that this is fiction now, but it could be reality at a later point, at least in some of its main features. And I actually think it plays a positive role in helping us to imagine those logical outcomes and what they would really mean for our individual and collective life together as human beings.
I think that relates also to this concept of scenarios, the climate change scenarios that we discussed briefly in our conversation piece. I was really fascinated to find that the idea of a scenario came from Italian Baroque theater, and that the idea was to present to the audience a little synopsis of what was coming up in the next play, and so that they were trying to summarize the future in these scenarios, where the future was the upcoming play. And now we've adopted this idea of climate change scenarios in our mathematical models of the climate system and how it's coupled to humanity. And I think one of the really interesting lessons from that is that humanists and other fields outside of science can help us to develop and imagine societies and solutions and approaches to the climate change issue that the scientists don't even have in mind just yet. And so we can, you know, put on a global stage the ideas and the changes, the transformations that are going to be required in the future to actually address the climate problem, not constrained by, you know, what exact technology do we have today, but what kind of lifestyle or cultural massive shifts can happen in the future that might put us on the trajectory we want to be on.
One of the ironies of scenarios is that the use of scenarios in forecasting and risk assessment was actually done starting in the 1970s by the Shell Oil Company in oil exploration. Mm-hmm. But they were really seeing it as a way of trying to work through what would happen under certain kinds of conditions and playing that out in order to understand risk in the future. And I think that we're in some sense engaging with the different imaginative products of art and literature as a kind of extension of that future thinking, that future forecasting, that playing out what would be the implications of certain kinds of starting conditions.
All right, Tyrus Miller and Stephen Allison, both scholars at the University of California, Irvine. Gentlemen, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.